Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Wednesday, and it'll be a good one today. Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten, will be on the show today. We'll talk about a variety of issues. Legitimate ones. Kevin sent me a list of things that he thought were big issues. Why isn't there an IndyCar racing deal in the Big Ten? That was scrapped.
I thought that was an NCAA potential sport.
You're lucky you have go-karts.
Love go-kart racing. I watched that the other day on TV.
You're a sad little man, I'll tell you.
All right, and we'll be talking with Jim Delaney about a wide variety of things. Penn State, the 25th anniversary of Penn State's official entry into the Big Ten is June 4th, and that was the premise around which I was able to get him on the show. We'll talk about that, about Rutgers, about getting into Madison Square Garden, which Penn State will do on January 30th with Michigan in a basketball-hockey doubleheader. They're also going to have the Big Ten tournament there in 2018. Pace of play rules in the in college basketball. Jim played college basketball for Dean Smith. Thus, his love for the game is very deep. So we'll talk to him about that and a couple of other things. Cost of attendance. Jabril Peppers of Michigan complaining today that he's on his last bag of ramen noodles. Interesting. Why don't you go around campus, Jabril, and find out how many people are down to their last dollar because of tuition that they personally paid?
Don't think he's going to find too many sympathetic ears there.
That just isn't. An athlete complaining about their situation. Shabazz Napier did it fine, and he had people eating out of his hand. Great. They ended up changing the rule. I know they say they talked about it before. It's no coincidence it hit the accelerator. Got it. The cost of attendance is not going to affect until three more months it goes into effect. And you can't find sympathetic ears out there. You may be able to find sympathetic ears in the media, but go to the library and ask them how they're doing on their last bag of ramen noodles. Oh, and by the way, about the student loans they're going to be paying back 10, 20, 30 years from now. What bothers me about this story, and it bothers me a lot, is there's no reality check here. Where's the reality check? I'm all for whatever athletes can do. I know they bring in tens of thousands of patrons to watch a game at Michigan Stadium. I got that, 105, 6,000 a game. Used to be 111. All right, I understand that. But at the same time, it's a university. Take a quick trip to the library, Jabril, and ask your fellow students how they're getting by. Oh, and by the way, about the student loans they have to pay. Where's the reality in that? That's the problem I have with this story, is that the story is always told from the complaining athlete's point of view. Do I feel bad? Have I talked to Penn State football players before and they've told me, hey, look, especially in the, this is before they did the 24/7 meal thing and so forth, that they've had to do the ramen noodle thing and sometimes it's not easy. Yeah, I've been told that. But they've also had the common sense to know that the other guy sitting in the calculus class with them is going to have tens of thousands of dollars in student loans. Oh, and by the way, are probably holding down a job. Oh, and by the way, probably are down to their last bag of ramen noodles, too. It's called college. Now, obviously, their job as student athletes is that is being the student athlete. That is a job unto itself. And the 20-hour deal, I mean, Jim Delaney brought this up, and we'll bring it up with him as well. It's outdated. The 20-hour thing is outdated. Remember Michigan got in trouble for it a couple of years ago? Rich Rodriguez was the coach. It's been outdated for a long time. It makes no sense. You know, and the bottom line is the amount of time physically spent on a practice field, I can tell you, is no more during the week, no more than 6 to 7 hours a week in the practice field. They don't spend 20 hours on the practice field. Now, the 20 hours includes everything they do, lifting weights, watching film, team meetings, things like that. That's part of the 20 hours. But in terms of the physical, I'm going to go out and go at it. They don't do more than 6 to 7 hours a week out there. That's it. That's the total amount of practice time for the week. They get a day off. For Penn State, that day off is Monday. Sunday is a team meeting, film, walkthrough. Their time in the field is a walkthrough. Monday's off. Tuesday, you go out there, there's some hitting. Wednesday, some. Thursday, none. And Thursday's understandably the shortest practice of the week. And by the end of the season, you're down to 5 to 6 hours on the practice field physically. Now, Penn State does believe in the current regime of lifting during the season. So they have lifting that they have to do during the season. Same thing in basketball. Basketball has the one day off per week. Basketball practice, most days basketball practice is 90 minutes. It's not longer than that. And you got game day. So take game day out of it. So you got game day out of it. You got, what, two games in a week and a day off. So the other 4 days you're on the practice floor, a grand total of 6 hours. Now, a lot of this, you know, and believe me, the day after a game, when they practice, it's all walkthrough and shots for an hour. It's probably 5 hours a week they're physically on the floor once they get into the season. The food thing is very important. I'm glad they did it. The stipend, and when Jim Delaney played at North Carolina, it was called laundry money. I think it was something like $15 or something like that, some nominal number. But it was also back in 1970-71, too. But, you know, I understand, you know, that a guy like Jabril Peppers puts in a lot of time and effort. He's lifting weights, he's running, he's getting himself in shape. As I told you on the show yesterday, what's the toughest month physically for Penn State football players to get ready for the season? It's not the winter program. It's June. The players will tell you that June's the toughest month. Outside, working in the sand pit, the whole thing. They'll tell you June is the toughest month. That's why when you see them work out at Live for Life, people are amazed at, well, look how cut they are. Look, you know, look at the muscle definition. Well, that's because they've just come off their toughest month to get them ready for the season. Cost of attendance is fine. The meal plan is fine. But student athletes get a lot. Like, if they want to turn it into, if they want to have minor league sports, then go to the minor leagues. Do what Emmanuel Mudiay did. Mudiay had a problem. You know, he verbally committed and actually had signed a commitment to go to SMU. There's a problem. He couldn't go. His brother ended up staying. So he went and played in China this past year. Was banged up, didn't play a lot, Moutier. But he's still going to be one of the top four guys picked in the draft. The Sixers have to choose between Moutier and D'Angelo Russell with that third pick. But he went to China. If the pros want a feeder system, form your own minor league. Sign guys all the way through. Do it the way baseball does. You're 18 years old in baseball, you have a choice. You can sign a contract, get sent to the minor leagues, usually for teams like the Phillies, for the Pirates, for the Cardinals. That team is down in Florida. Or you can go to college. And if you go to college, you've got to stay in 3 years. Then you can be drafted. You're drafted out of college, then you'll go to the New York Penn League. And the draft is coming up is a week from Monday, I believe, June 8th. A week from Monday. And when you watch that draft, you can be savvy when you see names. Okay, high school guy. Oh, they're going to send him to Florida. Oh, college guy. They're going to send him to Williamsport or State College. You can at least get a feel to know what teams are going to do. But baseball has a minor league. They develop their own players. It takes years in some cases. Years to do it. The NFL and the NBA are very lucky. They have college football and college basketball. Great weight training. Great coaching. Players set to go. But let's not treat college sports like a minor league. The vast majority of guys are not going to the pros. And when I mean the vast majority, I'm talking 97%+ are not going to the pros. 97%+ in football and 97%+ in basketball are not going to the pros. And it's probably 98.5% in the NBA not going to the pros. 97% not going to the NFL. Just the way it is. The reality checks the first 2 weeks of training camp where you sit back and go, I'm not in high school anymore. And then when you get there, you have to start using Twitter to tweet out how awful your situation is. You're on your last bag of ramen noodles. Really? Let's find out, Jabril, how your fellow clowns they'll owe in student loans when they leave Michigan as opposed to your debt when you leave Michigan. Oh, that's right. You have no debt. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Need a break? SMC can help. Sunbury Motors Ford wants to give you a spring break. Choose from over 250 new Fords with savings up to 10 grand. And financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months. And no payments for 90 days. Pick from over 40 of the fuel-efficient 2015 Ford Focus. And they're priced from just $16,980. SMC has 30 of the top-selling 2015 Ford Escapes. And they're slashed to as low as $19,915. The number one selling truck for 38 consecutive years is the Ford F-Series, and Sunbury Motors has 80 trucks in stock starting as low as $25,989. Every new Ford will be clearly marked during this unprecedented spring break sale at Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. SMC, proudly owned by the Merce family for 100 years. Have a safe and happy Memorial Day from Sunbury Motors.
Here's a quarter. Call someone who cares.
Student athletes work very, very hard. There's no question that food is part of their training. No question. And Jabril Peppers today from Michigan. I'm about to eat my last meal of the day, and that's oodles and noodles. It ain't funny, bro. I'm over here hurting. This is my last one in the 12-pack. Next one. People make a story out of anything. About getting paid. I just want to keep my fridge and cabinets full so I can eat. Point blank. And that's fair enough. I understand that. You do need fuel for training. I got it. But I fall on deaf ears a little bit on the complaint of this, is that I would like to know whether or not Jabril Peppers got grant money. And if he got grant money, he got to keep all of it. I would like to know what he did with it. If you're going to complain to the world, then it's up to, then it's okay to ask open questions. Did you get grant money? And my guess is he did. 75 to 80% of student athletes do. And if so, what did you do with it? Did you plan it out? Did you spend it on an Xbox? What did you do? Make car payments? I don't know. I mean, you're allowed to do what you wish with it. All right. I mean, these are questions that, for whatever reason, when this comes up, are never asked. What did you do with your grant money? And you know what? When I tell groups this, you should see the looks I get on faces. Really? They get grant money? Pell Grant? Really? Yeah. And they get to keep all of it. And when they do cost of attendance next year, they'll have that plus whatever grant money they get. If, you know, they qualify. And 75% qualify.
I'll tell you what, after looking the way I've been looking the last couple of months to a year now, there's not a whole lot of sympathy coming from me.
Well, I mean, seriously, go to the library and ask them. Here's another one, all right? What do you say that we take a little trip together and we go to Appalachia? Let's ask them how they're doing on a daily basis. Those people are fighting and struggling. There are people fighting and struggling all over the world to try and to get food. That's why my sympathy gets a little... Nobody's for the student-athlete more than I am. But when I hear complaining like that, I look at him and say, look, I know at the moment it's not easy, but you've got it really, really good compared to a chunk of the population out there. Really good. And he was banged up last year, only played 3 games, so I strongly recommend he also take classes. As talented as he is, and he's a very talented player, I'd still recommend strongly to him he get his degree from Michigan. Because nothing is for sure. Jim Delaney knows all about issues such as these and much more. He's coming up in just a few minutes. He'll join us from Rosemont, just outside of Chicago. So we'll be talking with him. Then in the final hour, and then a topic that will continue in the middle of next week when we do actually hit the 25 years. What do you think about Penn State in the Big Ten 25 years? It's amazing. An entire generation has now grown up and into college, senior year in college, even have graduated from college, with Penn State being a part of the Big Ten. They don't have any, they would have no recollection at all of Penn State being an independent and playing for national championships. Jim Delaney next on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone back and very pleased to be joined with us from just outside Chicago in Rosemont, the commissioner of the Big Ten, Jim Delaney. Jim, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Appreciate being on.
Jim, June 4th will be exactly 25 years when Penn State was voted into the Big Ten. In general terms, every partner brings something special to the table that's really helped you along the way. What has Penn State brought to the table for you in the conference?
You know, looking at the big landscape, the big picture, because Penn State was the first major expansion, there may have been others, Arizona and Arizona State in the late 70s, and Georgia Tech to North Carolina. But really, when you think about the five major conferences, to my recollection, it was the first mover. And so with all the other moves that have occurred, to be honest with you, some of them are really good, great fits. Some of them maybe not as good. But I always thought, and then and now, that it was a no-brainer simply because of the common characteristics of Penn State and the with reference to the existing Big Ten membership at the time, a major research institution, you know, quality undergraduate program, a broad-based sports program, exceptional national reputation in football, located in a contiguous state, member of the AAU, with lots of faculty having had shared experiences. And so the way I viewed it then and view it now is not that dissimilar. I knew that Penn State faced east as an institution. Institutions do face in a direction, and I thought that was positive. And I think it's turned out to be a very positive thing as the world has unfolded. Penn State has really acted as a bridge for the Big Ten to become a more significant part of Eastern culture, whether it's sports culture, political culture, media mm-hmm. culture, financial culture. It's where a lot of our people live. It's where they work. And I think Penn State's being in the conference for, you know, 23 years before Rutgers and Maryland came in has really aided and abetted the integration of both of those institutions. And but I thought it was the best fit, a natural fit. Looking back on it, not much changes in my mind about that. The only thing that I would say that I wish I knew more about expansion, integration, branding 25 years ago than I know now, because, you know, we would have done much more than we did. And that's sort of on, you know, the world, it's on me personally, but I just don't think that we thought as much about it, acted as much constructively to really spend time, embrace people, make them feel more welcome. And, you know, we certainly did it more with Nebraska and more with Rutgers and Maryland. And, you know, I regret that, but it wasn't for a lack of goodwill. It was simply for a lack of experience and staffing and sort of awareness of what expansion really meant and how you could really make the best of a good situation by actually working harder to make everybody feel good.
And in fact, that was going to be my next angle to you, was going to be about what lessons had you learned from Penn State that opened the door to make Nebraska, Maryland, and Rutgers an easier transition for them?
Well, you know, think about it. You know, 1990, we had 15 television games. You
right.
know? We had 8 or 9 on ABC, regional, 1 national with Ohio State, Michigan, and we had 6 games on ESPN, and ESPN was 10 million homes smaller than BTN. So the world has changed tremendously. The conferences have gotten to be more significant influencers of competition, of media. I think we've all done well in promoting ourselves and our schools. I think we realized, certainly I realized, probably, you know, 6, 8, 10 years in, that I hadn't done everything I could have done. So I started thinking about not only more expansion, but thinking about how I would do it differently if I could do it again. And I think that just means getting into the neighborhood. It means embracing and acknowledging, you know, people's different traditions, making them feel more welcome. And, you know, I don't care if it's a new person at work or whether it's a new friend or a new institution in a conference. I think those things are really important.
Jim, you mentioned in that answer television, and obviously everyone wants to ask you about television. You think about it all the time. But there's also something else with it. The New York, I think, Daily News ran an article back in February that millennials are falling off TV sets at 10.6% rate in the past year. That's at 18 to 34 group. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they're not watching things. They are on platforms. Does this now open up a wide range of thought for you as to platforms when you sit down to really null this out?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we've been, you know, studying the marketplace for 10 years and maybe 8 years, 10 years since we, you know, we went with the Big Ten Network. We knew technology would continue to morph and change. I think we had 350 events that were on the linear network or streamed in 2007. This year will be closer to 1,300. So a lot of that is digital. A lot of that is on Big Ten To Go or expanded Big Ten. A lot of it's international, globally available. So yeah, you know, the methods of distribution are wide ranging. I mean, it's from the internet to cable to telco to over the air to satellite, and that's not going to change. You know, cable has had a tremendous 25-year run, and you know, I'm not sure how many more, you know, 100 million home platforms there'll be, but certainly, you know, with watches and phones and tablets, man caves, you're going to get people watching in a variety of circumstances. And it really is about how many people are watching and what's the business model around that. And so, you know, there's technology change, there's consumer behavior change, there's also regulatory change. You know, Comcast and Time Warner deal was not approved, but it looks like Charter and Time Warner are trying to make a marriage, and that will get regulatory approval. So you have technology, you have regulatory approval, you have consumer taste. And so monitor and watch that all the time. Understand that sports is special, college sports in particular is special. And, you know, hope we've made some, I think, wise decisions in the past, and hopefully we'll make some more ones, some more good ones down the road. But there's no doubt about it that change is occurring. We have a good idea about the marketplace and the landscape, and our schools work together exceptionally well to present themselves for media opportunities when they arise.
The O'Bannon case, which you testified in, is in appeal. The Kessler case, which nobody talks about, is out there, and Nigel Hayes is one of the plaintiffs. So I don't want to get into the depth of that, but what have been the challenges of trying to stay ahead so the model is what you think is a good model for intercollegiate athletics but also for universities? What have those challenges been?
Oh, they're significant. I mean, it reminds me, I mean, the kind of the challenges to society and culture maybe in the late 60s where everything was being challenged. I think it's good preparation. I grew up during that time, and you know, every year there was something cataclysmic happening, whether it would be Watergate or whether it was Vietnam or whether it was the assassination of political leaders, civil rights leaders, urban tumult. You know, everything was being challenged. And so while it's not as serious as that period from a societal standpoint, it feels like that from a collegiate standpoint, because all the basic foundational elements are being challenged. I think it sort of operates at three levels. I think you have to do your business, compete, you know, make sure everybody's eligible, assign the officials, get games on television. So that's one level. Another level is that I think you have a responsibility where you still have some control over policy to drive an action-oriented progressive agenda to make sure you find the sweet spot, the balance between the student, the university, the team, the fans, and to do that in a way that, you know, is educationally based and as a result sustainable. In some areas, we have lost the ability to direct our own destiny because the federal courts are involved. And then the third area is the area of federal litigation, and people, you know, certainly have the right to bring lawsuits, plaintiffs, there's plenty of plaintiffs, attorneys around to accommodate them. We have the right to defend ourselves in the federal courts based on principle. And so how those things play out are sort of to be determined. You know, really, I think it was a Jenkins case. You know, I think Kessler is the attorney, but it's the Jenkins case.
That's right.
And the O'Bannon case. And, you know, those will play out. I mean, some of them, you know, are ones that are so fundamental that it's hard to see how there would ever be any kind of compromise or settlement. And therefore, I think they'll play all the way through the court system. And I guess the last thing I would say is that they're all statutorily based. These aren't constitutional issues. These are antitrust issues.
Right.
These are labor law issues, and these are Title IX issues. And so at the end of the day, you know, we're a law, we're a country of laws, and they will be adjudicated, and then Congress will look at it. And I think it'll actually take, you know, a number of years for all of this to play out. So I look at it as three arenas: operate, make the changes you should be making, and then also to defend yourself where you think it's appropriate to do so.
And under that realm, you floated your readiness last year. It was never a proposal, despite what people think. It would never was. But you floated it out there because you don't want intercollegiate athletics to be a minor league. Is that a fair assessment, just in terms of getting ideas out there?
I think intercollegiate athletics, you know, sponsored by universities, has got to be obviously part competition, but it's also got to be, you know, legitimately part educational.
Right.
And my sense was, in looking at these two sports, that we needed to improve some of the outcomes. So how one goes about that, there are a variety of approaches. I came up under a four-year scholarship. We've gone back to multi-year scholarships. I grew up under $15 a month laundry. We've gone to cost of attendance. I also experienced some form of a year of readiness. And so given the underperformance in these two sports academically, I thought it was a good way to shine the spotlight, to raise ideas and concepts, to share with the public as well as the thought leaders around the country. And, you know, if this is not the right approach, that's fine. Really, we've been away from it for a long time. Maybe it's not. But then, you know, what are the other ideas that people have? Because certainly the status quo and the secondary and the perception reality in some cases of the secondary nature of education in the process is not good, it's not healthy, and it's something that we're still in control of that I think we have a responsibility to rebalance.
As you told me before we started this, I mentioned the new rules in college basketball that are still to be officially voted upon next month. And you said, Steve, we played fast. We were playing in the 80s under Dean. What do you think about the proposals that cleared the first hurdle, and how interested are you to see what they can do for the game?
Well, I'm interested and supportive. I wasn't on the rules committee, but I was at I had a chance to be around the rules committee process a little bit for a variety of reasons. And, you know, I'm glad that they made the changes. I would tell you that there's no panacea. It is a combination of coaching and playing and rules and officiating. But, you know, clearly since really 1970, 71, which is the high point in scoring, 1 year after I finished school, we went then on a precipitous 12-year drop. 12 years in a row we dropped points. Then Ed Stites led the rules committee to two changes, the shot clock and the three-point shot. We regained in 8 of the next 9 years. And then we had another 12 or 13-year precipitous annual drop in scoring. So for whatever reason, the physicalness of the game, the imbalance, defense favoring over offense, you know, the game is losing points. We had one exception in 13-14. But we quickly dissipated whatever gains we made in that year this year. So I'm hopeful that we'll continue to study it, that we'll investigate different tactics, because I think that, you know, your point about earlier about the millennials changing their viewing habits, some of us are you know, old enough to remember when bowling, horse racing, and boxing were the three most highly rated sports in the 1950s. So nothing is guaranteed when you're dealing with the popularity of a sport. It can come onto the horizon, it can disappear, and we have a responsibility, I think, to the extent we want our game to be viewed and attended and enjoyed, to position the game in a way that there is appropriate balance between the offense and defense.
You and I remember Bo Burton getting into the arguments with Billy Packer about bowling versus basketball on TV. So, one final question, then I'll let you go, and we thank you for the time you've given us. You talked about the bridge to the East. The Big Ten tournament returns to Indianapolis this year. Then it'll go to the Verizon Center in D.C., then Madison Square Garden at 18, and Penn State will be a part of the first basketball hockey doubleheader involving the Big Ten on January 30th. When you've gone around, what kind of reception do you perceive the Big Ten has received in those markets, but also what is the perception you've received from others in the Midwest about having them in the conference?
Yeah. You know, I would say, to answer the first question about the reception and the reaction of the public, our fans, our alums, the casual sports fan, I think it's been really good. I mean, our teams are already playing a dozen games in the New York area, whether it's at Barclays or the Garden, or in Philly. And so, you know, we've been doing that for many years. The truth is that there's a lot of competition of all kinds in that Eastern corridor. So we're just glad to be there.
Right.
We've got a lot of people living there. Between Big Ten alums and Rutgers and Maryland, who are now, you know, in alums living in that area, we've well over a million people. They're all married to someone. They all have a couple kids. So you can get to 4 or 5 million pretty easy without talking about the casual fan. So I think, one, they're going to be appreciative of that. Probably 20% of our alumni base is probably located in that area. So I'm going to say over time, I would expect we have 20% of our championships out that way.
Wow.
We are our conference that lives in two regions, in the Midwest and the East. And we have one kind of member, a Big Ten member. And so there's going to be no exclusivity of championships. We'll have events in Omaha. We'll have events in Chicago and Indianapolis and Washington. And in the case of Washington and New York, I wanted to make it very clear as early as I could, the first opportunity we had, that we're going to have events out there, because we're clearly not visiting. We're clearly living. Got off New York, got a satellite office in D.C., had our first two lacrosse championships out there, had full distribution of BTN up and down that corridor from New York to D.C., New Jersey, Northern Virginia. And, you know, we intend to be a full participant in the sports community. We live there. We want to play there. We want to be part of it. Having grown up in New Jersey, I know exactly how competitive it is, and unless you're the Yankees or the Redskins or the Giants, nobody dominates. I think there's a play for us, and I'm very excited. As far as about the people in the Midwest, they're Big Ten people. They have pride in the Big Ten Conference. They look around and realize that, you know, Utah and Colorado probably are not in the Pac-12 original footprint, and Missouri and Texas are not in the SEC footprint.
Right.
And Indiana, Pennsylvania, New York, and Boston are not part of the ACC. And so in a world where all the major conferences are in two regions, historically they're in one, we recruit students and student-athletes and faculty and donors nationally, and we call our schools global in nature, global in reach. So I think that while some people wish yesterday were today, it is not. And therefore, we're gonna constructively build, and Rutgers have been great. New partners, and I think we have been active in making them feel fully part of the Big Ten, and I think that's how it should be.
Jim, on behalf of everyone, thanks so much for giving us your valuable time today. We appreciate it, and thanks for all you do for the conference.
Well, thanks for being part of it, and thanks for having me on today. Appreciate it.
Jim Delaney. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hope you enjoyed Jim Delaney. As he said to me during the break, he says, Steve, he said, we really hit all the big ticket items. It may not be the sexiest kind of topics to talk about, but they're the ones that actually affect you, the fan, and affect what you're watching. That's why we talked about it. Next hour, Penn State, 25 years in the Big Ten. Your thoughts.